This Fab FM podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mossman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mossman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
Welcome to the Fab FM microphones, a man who's used to a microphone because he's been in radio for 35 years. That is a long time, and it's a milestone for sure. How are you, Gazza?
I'm very well, and, you know, 35 years on in the tropics, I mean, it doesn't get better, does it?
It doesn't. Okay, I thought I'd have a little chat to you to celebrate your 35 years in radio, and let's go back and find out how you started. Now, I started on a midnight to dawn program. My guess is you started probably nighttime or midnight to dawn, but where did you start? And how the hell did you get into radio?
Well, to answer the second question there, I think a little bit like you, I love radio. And I used to tinker with bits of radio equipment. And I used to build, I mean, I'm going back probably to my early teens, used to make these little transmitters. And it used to fascinate me that I could, because I think they were the ones that you would perhaps get for surveillance. So I used to sort of modify them and put music on the end of them and then find out how far I could go and receive it. And this was FM, of course, somewhere at the end of the band.
So sort of a little bit of a Marconi thing happening. Mm.
Loved it. And as you know, I still love my ham radio and I enjoy talking to people all over the planet when my radio's up and running. But this was the broadcast stuff. And from that point, I thought, you know, I wouldn't mind doing that. Wouldn't mind. I mean, I enjoy the techie side, as you know, but I wouldn't mind being behind the mic. So like most people, well, I say that a lot of people, certainly back then in the 80s and before that, how they started in radio was on hospital radio in the UK.
And hospital radio.
That's right.
Oh.
And back then, some of these studios were amazing. Probably, if I go back, because this particular station I had some involvement with for a number of years, and they actually built a new studio complex. And it was amazing. One of the best complexes, equipment-wise, I've ever worked in.
But and if you had a heart attack, you'd have a doctor and nurse right there.
Indeed. You're exactly right. You know how I work. But thinking back to then, mid-80s and before that, most people, when they went to hospital, didn't really have anything. Portable tellies weren't really allowed. They're very expensive. There were Walkmans. Some people liked them with the cassettes and that, but there's nothing else. So when you were in hospital, all you had was hospital radio. When you weren't being, you know, tended to by the nurses or the surgeon.
So this radio show that you did just went around to the hospital and those in hospital could tune into it and listen to it, hear some music, hear some talk, chats and a little bit of information, etc.
Exactly right. We actually broadcast to three different hospitals. So we had about a potential audience of about 3,000 at any one time. So, again, thinking that most of those people had nothing really else to do. A lot of the shows were evening times. There were other. I think we broadcast Radio 2 at certain times, BBC, when there was no one managing the station. And we actually physically went out and got requests too. And one of the very first jobs I got, apart from doing bits of a show, was out getting requests. You know, you had to do your bit of apprenticeship, which was good, but interesting. And a couple of very quick stories. One of the very first times I ever went round on my own with my clipboard, because it was called Radio St Helier, which has nothing to do with the islands just off the British coast, but it was called Radio St Helier, South London, and went round, Radio St Helier, what would you like? And the bloke obviously didn't like it in the hospital. When he looked at me and he went, "You can burn the place down." And being very green, I went, "Who's it by?"
Oh, that's good. And so it was real hands-on as far as requests. Mm. I mean, if you get on the radio and say, "What would you like to hear?" But you actually went to the people. And then suddenly later on they heard that same announcer who'd been at their bedside on the radio.
Indeed. And we were given a couple of awards. You would have a little bit of a roster So you'd be given those wards that particular day. Or you might have to go over the day before and get them from one of the other hospitals. But I don't know how hospital radio is these days with all the other technology we have. But back then, huge numbers of phone calls. You'd be amazed.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Gary McElroy at Ward 14.
That's right.
Oh, how fantastic. All right. So let's talk about the different stuff. How many radio? Now, we'll count the hospital because that was a real radio station. And counting this one, I believe it is a real radio station.
Mm, absolutely.
So how many radio stations have you worked for in total? Just add them up for
me. We'll go through them because not long after the hospital thing, I kept doing that because it was a good grounding, a good basis. But I got involved in what was called CDR, which was Community Development Radio, which was based in Shepherd's Bush. Now, this was a London station. The idea was to sort of bring communities together. Now, that was the idea. So that's two. Then I went to, and I've got to think about this, this is all 30-odd years ago, of course. Then I went, I did some work on some of the pirate stations, actually.
Okay.
And there were many, to be truthful. But one that sticks in my mind was London Wide Radio, LWR, which became a very well-known station and knocked all the big broadcasters for six at one point.
So was that pirate radio?
That was pirate radio.
Okay.
But LWR was one of the key stations that changed the way a lot of stations were AM, but sort of had FM on the side.
Oh,
it was a bit weird, you know, FM was the underdog.
Yes.
And LWR plus a couple of others came along and was FM, and suddenly sort of capital radio, AM, became capital FM. So it changed the way of thinking. So there was LWR. There was Medina, which was...
These are all pirate.
This was a pirate.
And then did you say, "Arr"?
No, I never... No,
we never said that.
But it came out of the pirate ships, of course, of the 60s, but
yes,
these were land-based FM stations in London.
So sorry, I was thinking they were out on the water in
a
ship.
No, these were in normally tower blocks.
Oh, so bricks and mortar.
Indeed.
Okay.
And there's lots of... if we had 3 hours, lots of weird stories I could tell you about.
We haven't got 3 hours.
So there was... I think we're up to four.
Yeah.
There was then WNK, which was the very first legal dance music station to get its license in London. And that was based in North London, in Woodgreave. And that came out of the pirates. That was sort of like a pirate station, but legal. Now, that didn't last long. It was a long, complicated thing, but they shared their frequency with a Greek station, and the Greek station got the license. Anyway, so that's, I think, five. Then there was Choice FM, which was the equivalent station, but in South London. And so that's six. Then,
do we move out of England yet? Are we still?
No. This is still early 90s. And then I had a bit of, because a little bit like yourself, you know, I mean, you've been in broadcasting pretty much all your life, but you do the odd other thing, you know, sometimes. And I've had businesses and that. So probably from about that point, there might be the odd other one in there. I can't think, but...
must have been memorable.
It must have been, yes. But, you know, me, it's a very foggy mind, me, as you know.
Yeah.
But probably when I was really getting back into it was when I got to New Zealand.
Okay, so you lobbed in New Zealand. Which city?
In Christchurch.
Christchurch, and you got a job in radio straight away?
No. Oh. I was working for a telecommunications company. And but I sort of wanted to do the radio, and I went to one AM station, and the bloke said, "They won't understand you, mate. They will not get your accent." And I thought, well, I can't be that. I'm a bit cockney, but surely. So that never went anywhere. But then I worked for Radio Redwood, which is a well-known station based in Christchurch. It's been there many years. And I will tell you one very quick story, because it's a very good story. I used to do the breakfast show, and we had an issue with our transmitter, and it was broadcasting as well as our frequency into the input frequency of the police channels. So I was coming out on every police vehicle in Canterbury, not just Christchurch. And it kicks up a bit of a stink. The media got hold of it. I had other breakfast shows ringing my breakfast show, having a laugh with me, and myself and the station manager had a picture on the front of the Press, which is the main national paper in New Zealand, across the country.
Car 54, where are you?
Well, I said I was the policeman's choice, you see. And apparently I was playing Dolly...
It's better than being the policeman's ball.
That's very true. Apparently, though, I was playing Dolly Parton, which I don't remember, but they were listening to that. Anyway...
Well, if you're going to play anybody, play Dolly.
Indeed.
Yep.
And I then went to Plains FM, which was one of the oldest stations in Christchurch, did a lot of good work in the area. It was sort of a bit like what I sort of felt like a BBC station, but in New Zealand, and worked with them. And then my wife and I decided to come across the ditch.
Oh, before you leave there, however, while you were working in radio over there, didn't we have a little earthquake?
We did indeed. And the one that I call the worst one in terms of devastation and loss of life was the February one, that we had many others and big ones around that time. But I'd just finished my show. And I was bending over to get some bits from the CD box and do some things, and bang, it kicked in. Fortunately, I was in a bomb-proof building, actually, and it was an old army or RAF officers' mess.
So you're in the bunker, so to speak.
Yeah, sort of thing. So wow. I was in a very safe building, but obviously a lot of devastation around as that was happening. And then when I went to Plains, of course, part of my job at Plains FM was to help with the rebuild in terms of my radio show.
Now, how important was radio to helping the folks?
Oh, I would say there were points when that was probably all they had. Actually, radio. They're right, because a lot of time people didn't have the power, but they had the battery radios. They had the wind-up radios. You can get the wind-up ones. So
they've still got wind-up radios in New Zealand.
You can still get wind-up radios. Oh. Yes, and that is true. You wind them up, and they run for about 30 minutes.
That sums up New Zealand. Oh, okay. So so you're very much part of that, and I know that you've mentioned that to me several times. Mm. So you're proud of what you achieved during that period of getting the information out. And I know when disasters strike, I think radio shines.
It does. And, you know, people like yourself and myself, we sort of come to the party a little bit. We realise the situation. And, you know, it was a tough time. And I had this sort of role too. Sometimes we had a thing called the quake panel. We'd have a politician, MP, we'd have a councillor. It might be someone from an insurance company, a member of the public with a roof missing. And they would have the most tremendous debates and arguments on air. I just let them get on with it. But it was good stuff. And, you and I try to make a difference. And I think that did. And obviously the rebuild still goes on. But very interesting times. There's nothing more interesting than being in the middle of a radio show when the studio starts moving.
Yes, did the earth move for you too, darling?
Exactly.
Yes. All right, so we're across the ditch and you lob in Australia. What's your first radio job in Australia?
Sales, actually, because I was trying to get...
Where?
In Mount Isa.
Mount Isa, of all places.
So I was trying to get a job. I was still in New Zealand, and my wife's cousin said, well, come to Mount Isa and come in the mines, earn yourself some big money. I thought, well, you know, I'm getting on a bit, really. But I said, hey, look, I'll come and do some courses. And the last day of a five-day course, I thought I'd better go out and drop these certificates, these new certificates, how to, you know, dig down holes and things. And I went round, and the very last, 5:30, the last place I went in, the lady said, what do you do? And I said, well, normally radio. She said, well, there's a radio job going. I think it's sales, but have a chat. So I thought, well, at least I can get back in the industry.
Leg in the door.
Yes. And when I got there, I realised there wasn't a lot of connectivity with the Townsville-based studios and Mount Isa and Cloncurry, where we broadcast. So I started this thing called the Gazza Challenge after a lot of persuasion with the management in Townsville. They didn't really like it. But I did it and kept doing it, and it became immensely popular because there was this comedian, this loony on the streets doing these weird things.
You?
Me,
you.
Yes, indeed.
Gaz are doing his weird challenges. So you were in sales.
Doing a bit of both then by that stage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes.
So you eased into it. They didn't look at you and say, oh, you can be a star kid, come from sales. No, it was a gradual process.
Never seems to happen. Well, it never happens to me, but I had to force my way in. And people were a little bit, oh, you know, what's this bloke doing? But I kept at it, and it became so popular they couldn't argue. And then somebody else had a chat with me, and we thought, well, we could do this plus other stuff on the coast. So I thought, here's a chance to get to the coast.
And of course, with your accent as well, it's never held you back. And I don't think it should hold you back, because I don't care what accent I'm listening to, as long as it's an entertaining person on the radio. So, you know, some people may not like the English accent, the Cockney accent, and other people do. I find if you're professional, which you are, it doesn't matter whether you've got an American accent, a British accent, Australian accent. As long as you are entertaining on the radio and you care about your listeners, and I know you do, I think that's the main thing.
I think, you know, I'd have to agree in caring about listeners. I treat every listener individually when I'm on the mic. I really do. You know, obviously I don't know everyone and can't see everyone, but I think of one person at a time as if I'm talking that way. And that's important. I think that comes across. In New Zealand, they actually wanted me to actually ham up the Cockney accent more, funnily enough.
But really?
Yeah. Oh, we want more of that, you know.
Yeah, right, what's your worst job you ever had?
I was singing versions of Knees Up Mother Brown. And, you know.
Doing Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, okay, Mount Isa's finished. You then went to?
Castlereagh Coast.
Castlereagh Coast to Innisfail, I understand.
That's right.
Yeah. You became a big personality down on the Castlereagh Coast, didn't you?
It was amazing, I have to say, because the area we covered was huge, pretty much, you know, from Cairns down to Mackay. And with the Gaza Challenge as well, which I think the key thing about getting popular, even in radio, is being a personality and being actually still getting out amongst the public, which was what I was doing. And then an afternoon shift which had features and fun things. People liked it. And it was like this normal bloke. He's just like a normal bloke, and he was on the radio. You know, he might be a Cockney, but my dad was a Cockney. I got a lot of, you know, Aussies, and my dad was a Cockney, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And people connected. That's the thing, connected, you've got to connect. And once you do
connect.
That. And then I had the chance to come live in total paradise. And
yes.
Here we are.
Well, let me put this question to you. Of course, you're on the Castlereagh Coast, and you've always wanted to live up here in the Douglas Shire, in Port Douglas, Mossman. I know you lived in Mossman. You're now in Port Douglas. What is it about Port Douglas and this region that drew you here, apart from the fact, I mean, you really wanted to come here before you got the job here. So what attracted you to this area?
First visit, and that was to go out on a reef trip, and I assume Port Douglas was a couple of pubs and, you know, a few other little bits and pieces, like a lot of towns are, and thought, hang on a minute, this is a little bit special. And the wife and I looked at each other and thought, we've got to come back for a holiday. And I think we started to fall more and more in love with it. And to be fair, like a lot of small communities in far north Queensland, I think there's always work to be done. You know, there's work to be done with people and helping communities. And radio can do that. And,
yes,
it's a beautiful part of the world, as we all know that. And what more can you want, really?
Exactly. Well, you got exactly what you wanted, because you're not only here with your beautiful wife, Alison, but your parents moved lock, stock and barrel from England, even with furniture, to live in Port Douglas. Now, that must be incredible for you that they did that, firstly, and that you have your parents with you.
So it's amazing. And because they're so healthy, it's like we're cheating time a little bit, because we do stuff and it's like, you know, we should have been doing this 30, 40 years ago. Here we are still doing fun things. They tune in every day. They've always tuned in. Even when I was doing weird hour stuff in New Zealand, they would get up, listen on the internet, silly hours of the morning. And they still do. And they even, Helga, my tea lady, you know, they were there on day one when Helga first joined me 30 years ago, 1990. So they have a laugh about that. And it's great. And you know, as you say, sometimes you love what you do, and we're lucky to be doing what we're doing. It's great.
And I just want to say, your father is a great supporter of this radio station. He absolutely loves it. Just very quickly, what did your dad do in a previous life?
He was a telecoms man. So,
so yes. Similar, yep. Similar yep. thing, telecom, waves
technical
in the
stuff.
Air.
But when he was in the RAF doing his national service.
Hello, the RAF, yes.
He used to dress up and do a lot of stuff on stage, sometimes in a lady's outfit, so you can see the connection there.
Oh, you're kidding me. He was on the stage as well. Oh, see. The acorn does not fall far from the tree.
Indeed, and it's and I only learned some of this recently. I thought, so that's where the dressing up thing comes from. It's bizarre.
Your father
did it,
and like father, like son.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, 35 years in the business, between 1 and 4 on weekdays on Fab FM, as you continue the tradition of radio.
We do, and I think the personality side of radio, the things that's, you know, maybe some of the younger jocks have been forced out of a little bit, is just being a personality, not being a robot. And if we can continue to do that here, then the longer, you know, long, may it go on forever, is what I'm trying to say, very badly.
Gary, thank you.
Cheers, mate.